Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in United States against Rogers. Jones. Do we have someone missing here?
Mr. William, that is.
Should we start without him?
Mr. Jones, I think you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. Broadly stated, the controlling issue in these cases is whether the homestead rights of a delinquent taxpayer's spouse preclude enforcement of a federal tax lien against the delinquent taxpayer's interest in the homestead property. The Internal Revenue Service made substantial tax assessments against Respondent Rogers' husband, as well as the husband of Respondent Ingram. This litigation arises from the government's efforts to collect those taxes. Pertinent facts are undisputed. Respondent Rogers and her former husband, Philip Bosco, were married in 1937. In 1955, they purchased the real property involved in this case. The property was community property, and Respondent and her husband claimed the property as a homestead under Texas law. In 1971 and 1972, the Internal Revenue Service made assessments against Philip Bosco in excess of $900,000 for federal wagering taxes. Bosco died in 1974. The assessed taxes remain unpaid. Respondent Rogers remarried, and she now occupies the property with her new husband. The government filed this action in the United States District Court for the Northern District of Texas, seeking to reduce its assessments against Bosco to judgment to enforce the tax liens against any property belonging to Bosco, and to secure a deficiency judgment for any unpaid tax liability or unsatisfied tax liability. In the other case, Respondent Ingram and her husband, Donald Ingram, acquired real property during their marriage that they claimed as a homestead. As in the Rogers case, the property was community property. In 1972 and 1973, the Internal Revenue Service made assessments against Donald Ingram for unpaid taxes withheld from the wages of the employees of a company of which Donald Ingram was the president. The unpaid balance of the assessments is about $9,000. In connection with their subsequent divorce, Donald Ingram conveyed his interest in the homestead properties to Respondent Ingram. After unsuccessfully attempting to dispose of the properties, Respondent Ingram and the trustee for the properties filed this action against the United States and several other Ingram creditors in state court to quiet title to the property and to remove any liens encumbering the property. The United States removed the action to the United States District Court for the Northern District of Texas and filed a counterclaim seeking enforcement of its tax liens. Donald Ingram was added as a defendant on the government's counterclaim. Without explanation, the district court refused to enforce the tax liens in the Rogers case, but the same court enforced the tax liens in the Ingram case. On appeal, the two cases were consolidated for oral argument. The Court of Appeals held that because the homestead interest of a spouse is characterized as a property interest under Texas law, the government cannot enforce its tax lien against the homestead property while the delinquent taxpayer's spouse chooses to maintain her homestead interest in the property. Accordingly, the court affirmed the judgment for Respondent Rogers in pertinent part and reversed the judgment for the government against Respondent Ingram in pertinent part. The questions in these cases are matters of statutory interpretation. The relevant provisions of the Internal Revenue Code are Section 6334, which exempts certain classes of property from the reach from levy for federal taxes, Section 6321, which creates a lien against all property belonging to a delinquent taxpayer and in favor of the government, Section 7403, which provides for a civil action to enforce a tax lien against any property in which a delinquent taxpayer has any right, title, or interest. Except for the very narrow exemptions set out in Section 6334, all of a delinquent taxpayer's property and rights in property are subject to levy to satisfy federal tax liens, federal tax claims. Homestead property is not mentioned in Section 6334, nor does any other federal statute purport to exempt such property from federal tax claims. State laws exempting property from the claims of private creditors are wholly ineffective against the federal government. The Internal Revenue Service's regulations are quite explicit on this point. No provision of a state law may exempt property or rights to property from levy for the collection of any federal tax. Thus, property exempt from execution under state personal or homestead exemption laws is nevertheless subject to levy by the United States for collection of its taxes. Under Section 6321, the United States has a lien on all property and rights to property belonging to any person who fails to pay his taxes after appropriate demand. Whether the taxpayer...
Mr. Jones, let me get the government's position straight. I don't think any of us question the susceptibility of a homestead to the enforcement of a federal tax lien. But is it the government's position that if the delinquent taxpayer owns any interest in a homestead, any partial interest, that it may proceed to sell the entire homestead?
Our position is that Congress has authorized the Attorney General to file suit against any property in which the delinquent taxpayer has an interest. And our position is that there may be circumstances, not present here, in which it would be appropriate to sell only the delinquent taxpayer's interest. But where that can't be done, the government is entitled to sell the entire property with division of the proceeds as the means of accommodating the interest of any other parties who have interest.
So that here you would, in effect, sell the homestead under Mrs. Rogers, who continued to occupy it and who, under state law, had the right to occupy it for the balance of her lifetime. You would, in effect, evict her and give her her share of the proceeds.
That's essentially correct.
Well, essentially, isn't it correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Now, then let me ask you this. Suppose your delinquent taxpayer is a person who holds a mortgage on my property, and the government moves in to enforce the lien, the tax lien on the mortgage. Does that mean that it can sell my property?
Well, I'm not clear that the mortgagee's interest in your property would be sufficient for the government's tax lien to attach.
Well, it's an interest in property. It's an interest in my homestead property, isn't it?
Well, if it is, Congress has said that under Section 7403, the government may proceed against any property in which the taxpayer has an interest or in which the government has a lien. Now, the district director or the secretary certainly may take into account your interest in the property or any other interest in the property in determining whether to proceed against the property by means of foreclosure under Section 7403 or by administrative levy. But once the district director or the Secretary of Treasury has made that determination, Congress has provided for enforcement of the tax lien.
Well, I'm just suggesting that I think the ultimate, or your argument taken to the ultimate conclusion means that they can sell my property in order to foreclose the lien on the mortgagee's property. Let me put it another way. Suppose that my next-door neighbor has an easement over my homestead property, and he's delinquent in taxes. May the government foreclose on his easement and hence sell my property?
Well, the easement might be marketable independent of the property, and it might be permissible to attempt to sell the easement without selling your property as well.
Well, isn't that in fact what the government does, is sell the interest of the holder of the easement?
Where that is possible, where there's a separate market for the property, the government may indeed decide to proceed in that manner.
Why can't the government in this case sell Mr. Rogers' interest, Mr. Rogers' estate's interest in the homestead, which is basically an interest that will become possessory after Mrs. Rogers either dies or gives up the homestead?
Well, the reason is that there's no separate market for Mr. Rogers'
fractional interest.
Well,
how do you know that? If Mrs. Rogers is elderly and isn't going to live long and the property has substantial value, how can you say there's no interest?
Well, I said there's no separate market for fractional interest of the sort involved in this case.
Of course, you just told me that that is not the government's position, that you want the whole bundle of wax. You want to sell the whole homestead and give her share of the proceeds.
Well, this case is quite different from the hypotheticals you posed because under Texas law, community property under the joint control of both spouses is subject to the claims of creditors of either spouse for debts incurred during the marriage. And therefore, our position is that Mrs. Rogers isn't entitled to any part of the proceeds in this case.
Well, under Texas law, Mr. Rogers, while he lived, could not sell that homestead. Correct?
That's correct. Without Mrs. Rogers' consent.
Why should the government, in asserting its lien against him for delinquent taxes, have any greater right than he had?
Because in enforcing its lien, the government doesn't simply step into the shoes of the
Well, then again, I say the government wants the whole hog. It wants to sell the property out from under Mrs. Rogers'
Justice Blackmun, the
life
government,
occupancy.
The government's position is only that Congress decides what property is exempt from levy. Congress has not provided an exemption for homestead property. Under the facts of this case, Mrs. Rogers is being denied nothing that she's entitled to.
Well, you say that the government, though, doesn't simply stand in the shoes of Mr. Rogers. Whose shoes does it stand in?
The government is entitled to the rights Congress has provided under Section 7403.
What rights has Congress provided, other than the rights that belong to Mr. Rogers, against whom the lien?
Well, Congress created a lien on the property for the payment of the taxes, and under Section 7403, the government is entitled to enforce that lien by forcing sale of the property and division of the proceeds in accordance with the respective interests of any other parties who have claims against the property.
What is your definition of the word property? The husband's interest or the entire fee?
Well, state law defines what
apart from state law, what's your definition of the word property in the federal statute? It's the husband's interest, isn't it? Has to be.
I'm not sure I understand the question. State law says that the husband had a property interest, and the Court of Appeals held that each of the delinquent taxpayers in these cases had an undivided one-half interest in the property. In addition, however, under Texas law, community property is subject to the claims of creditors for debts incurred during the marriage. It appears, therefore, that in Texas, both spouses have a sufficient property interest in all community property to subject it, the property, to the claims of any creditors of either one of them. To further answer Justice O'Connor's question, where there is no interest or no separate market for a fractional interest, both the taxpayer and the government would be harmed or suffer detriment by attempting to sell just the fractional interest.
Well, what if you have A and B, tenants in common under state law, not related by marriage or otherwise, and the law of the state is that one tenant in common cannot force another tenant in common to sell the property. All you can do is sell your interest. And the government has a tax claim against A. Do you think under the statute that you're claiming under that the government can force both tenants in common to sell the property, to sell the physical property, rather than just the tenancy in common interest of the one against whom it has a tax lien?
If there were a separate market for the A's half of the property, then there wouldn't be any need to sell both interests. But if there wasn't, the government would be entitled to have the entire property sold and division of the proceeds in accordance with the interest of A and B.
So it's almost a separate inquiry in each one of these cases, whether there's a separate market, as you put it? Do you find that in the statute somewhere?
No. The focus of the 1936 amendments was on providing amendments to Section 7403 was on providing an effective remedy for foreclosure against personal property.
Could I interrupt you to put this on a little broader proposition? I guess some of the other questions the same way. In the Rogers brief at page 18, they rely on a rather broad principle that the collector has rights no greater than those of the taxpayer whose rights to property he seeks to foreclose on, that you can't go beyond the shoes of the taxpayer, in effect. And you didn't respond to that in your reply brief. I just wonder if, other than this case, has the government ever asserted a greater right than the taxpayer himself could have asserted?
Well, I don't know how many cases. There's at least one. In Herndon, the government levied on homestead property, even though under the law of the state, the taxpayer would have no right to sell his interest in the property without the consent of his spouse. The government, in enforcing a lien, exercises the rights Congress has provided. It's not an assignee of the taxpayer. And contrary to the suggestion of the Fifth Circuit in case Folsom, the government is not obliged to first acquire the taxpayer's interest.
Let me change my question. Yes, so Herndon was another homestead case,
right,
which we didn't review. And the question here is, what are the government's rights in a homestead context? And I'm asking, outside of the homestead context, is there any precedent for the government asserting a greater right, greater property right, than that of the taxpayer against whom the government seeks to foreclose? Go beyond the government in a tax situation. Any lien holder having a greater right than the property right of the lienee? In any context?
It's somewhat difficult to answer that question because the rights of a lien holder would be, except for the federal government, would be determined by state law, and that would depend on the law of the particular state in which the lien is asserted.
I just wanted to give you a broader range. Let's leave it then with the government. Any time the government has done that.
Well, I'm not aware of any circumstances where the question has come up. But it's fairly well established that state exemptions don't provide any obstacle to the government's attempts to enforce its tax liens. Here, there is assertedly a joint owner of the property. The government is attempting to enforce its lien against the property interest of the delinquent taxpayer. In order to do that, the entire property must be sold because, as I mentioned before, there's no separate interest or separate market for the homestead property, I mean, which a tax sale purchaser couldn't do anything with under state law.
Well, that brings me back to my easement hypothetical.
Well, for an easement, as I remember from law school, may well be of value to individuals other than the person holding it, and they are transferable unless there is a limitation in the document granting the easement. And it may well be that an easement can be sold without interfering with your interest in the property at all.
And if it can't?
And if it can't?
You're driven right back to Justice Rehnquist's inquiry.
But you can never keep any more than the back of the easement.
That's right.
It may not be very much. If you can't sell it,
it's not worth anything.
That's absolutely right.
You probably wouldn't be selling the property anyway.
True. And all of those factors.
Well, if you can't keep any more than the value of the easement, in the Rogers case, you couldn't keep any more than the value of Mr. Rogers' estate's interest, which you've asserted is very small.
No. There is a difference, I think, between saying that a property, that a particular fractional interest is unmarketable because no one would be willing to buy it, and saying that the taxpayer's interest is without value. Here, it is clear beyond any question that both of the delinquent taxpayers had an undivided one-half interest, 50% interest in the homestead property. In addition, and just as to that, the Rogers homestead is estimated to be worth about $150,000. So the government is entitled to at least 50% of the proceeds of any sale. Our point is that attempting to sell Mr. Rogers' one-half interest that a tax sale purchaser couldn't do anything with until Mrs. Rogers decided to abandon the homestead or for some other reason terminated, because nobody would be interested in buying this one-half interest, or at least there's no established market for it, because of the limitations on its use, we say that the only way the government and the interest of the taxpayer can be served is by selling the entire property and dividing the proceeds among the respective claimants to the property. And it's our position that that's the accommodation Congress intended under the circumstances of this case, or these cases. The Fifth Circuit has taken the position that under 7403, the only thing that can be sold is the taxpayer's interest in the property. Every other court of appeals that's considered that question has rejected the Fifth Circuit's position. The Fifth Circuit's reading of 7403 is based, we submit, on a misapprehension of the rights of the government under 7403.
Are you speaking of the Folsom case?
Excuse me?
Are you speaking of the Folsom case?
Yes.
Of course, the Folsom case isn't before us.
That's right, but in this case, the Court of Appeals...
It may well be wrong if it had come here.
And in this case, the Court of Appeals adopted exactly the same reasoning and applied it in this case.
Except you have different facts. You have homestead interest as distinguished from a tenancy in common, as I understand the Folsom case was.
That's right. But it's well settled that state laws exempting property from the claims of private creditors are simply ineffective against the federal government. So this case, in pertinent part, the facts in this case, the relevant facts in this case, are no different from Folsom. What you have is joint owners of property, one of the joint owners being a delinquent taxpayer and the other not a taxpayer. And the question is to what extent the government is entitled to sell the interest of the non-delinquent taxpayer in order to maximize the return of the sale, or the proceeds of the sale, to the benefit of both the government's tax collection efforts and the interest of the taxpayer in satisfying his tax liability. The Court of Appeals in this case focused on the non-delinquent taxpayer's interest in the property. According to the Court of Appeals, if the delinquent taxpayer's homestead rights are characterized as property rights under state law, the government cannot enforce a concededly valid lien against the property until the delinquent taxpayer's spouse decides to abandon his homestead. Whatever the amount of the taxpayer's liability, and however valuable the property, the government is, according to the Fifth Circuit, powerless to enforce its lien against the property. We submit that this Court's decisions establish the proposition that if the delinquent taxpayer has an interest that constitutes property under state law, the federal lien attaches and the lien is enforceable under 7403.
The question here isn't whether the lien is good. This question is, when can it be enforced?
Well, whether it's enforceable here.
No, not whether. It ultimately and inevitably will be enforced. Under state law, has a life estate in the property. She's got the right to occupy it during her lifetime. Well, when she dies, the lien will still be good, won't it?
Well.
And if she wants to sell it, the lien will have to be satisfied.
It's not clear that that's true.
Why isn't that true?
Well,
is anybody suggesting that the lien is invalid here? The lien will have to be satisfied up to his share of the value of the property.
Well, whatever that is. But
that's all you can get anyway.
That's right. I mean, the Court of Appeals recognized that the delinquent taxpayers here owned at least 50% of the property. The other question is how much more than that the government is entitled to. But although the Court of Appeals purported to how much under state law, whether his rights in the community property are sufficient to constitute property, and whether the government's tax lien would attach to the entire property because of the rights accorded.
Well, it would attach to the entire property, but if you were allowed to foreclose this lien, all you would get is to satisfy your lien is the value of his interest in the property.
That's right. Okay. And although the Court of Appeals purported to leave open the possibility that at some point the government might be allowed to enforce its lien, there's no guarantee that the value of the liens won't be substantially eroded in the meantime, and furthermore, the liens might be lost altogether, either because the government fails to keep track of this woman, the taxpayer's spouses, or fails to keep track of the proceeds of any disposition of the properties.
If you actually recorded your lien, anybody who's going to buy that property is either going to pay a lesser price if the property is going to be subject to the lien, or they're going to insist on its being satisfied so they can get clear title.
Well, that's true, but it's not quite clear which of those alternatives would be pursued, and whether the government would ever be paid without reasserting its rights. The Court of Appeals suggested that the lien attached to the homestead and that the homestead rights of the spouse would continue to protect the homestead from enforcement of the lien for as long as Mrs. Rogers maintained the homestead, even if she maintained her homestead by substituting another property. Okay, or selling this property and then investing the proceeds in something else.
Does the homestead interest attach in Texas law to the property acquired in substitution for the original homestead property? Does the homestead roll over into the new property?
That's what the Court of Appeals said.
And what is your view of Texas law on that point?
I have no basis for disagreeing with that assertion by the Court of Appeals, and that's not a question.
Well,
that's
not the Court of Appeals didn't rule that if there was a substitution that your lien would have to attach to the substituted property. They didn't say you couldn't collect your on your lien right then, did they? because there was no occasion to rule on that.
That's right, and that's why I was not quite as sanguine about the possibilities of the government collecting upon the sale. Federal tax liens are enforceable against all of a delinquent taxpayer's property. Congress has provided for the sale of any property in which the delinquent taxpayer has an interest and for division of the proceeds as the means of accommodating the interest of any co-owners of the property.
Mr. Jones, suppose the taxpayer had the fee interest in a piece of property and he gave his wife or someone else a life estate in the property, and thereafter the lien attached. Would you evict the life tenant?
For purposes of selling the property?
Correct.
I think so.
You think you could evict the life tenant?
Subject to division of the proceeds for whatever value the life estate would have had.
Even though the fee owner could not have evicted the life tenant.
That's right.
I imagine you have a little difficulty finding any cases that hold that.
Well, Congress has provided for the means of accommodating the interest of any people who have interest in the property other than the taxpayer.
Well, this is a life estate case, isn't it? Among other things, a homestead interest entitles a person to the lady in this case to occupy the property for a lifetime.
Well, it's not precisely a life estate case because...
I know it isn't precisely, but she has an interest during her lifetime that she that her heirs will not have.
Right, for so long as she chooses to use it. She could
move
and abandon it.
She has both a life estate and a 50% interest in the remainder, whereas in my case, she didn't even have the 50% interest in the remainder. Is the only difference?
Well, in order to maintain her life estate in this property, she has to continue to occupy the property. So it's different in that respect.
Mr. Elliott.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. In this case, the government takes the awesome position that the property of one may be used to satisfy the tax liability of another. To this claim, we make two arguments. First, there can be no foreclosure of the wife's separate homestead property because in Texas, it is indivisible, it is individual to her, and it is indefeasible during her lifetime or until her earlier voluntary relinquishment. Secondly, that the district court's judgment not ordering foreclosure in the Rogers case should not be disturbed here because the government's made no claim of abuse of discretion and hasn't even attempted to overturn that finding on that ground. Since the Congress defined the source from which tax liability may be enforced, that is, property and rights to property of the taxpayer, it's clear here that the government is attempting to attack and utterly destroy the property of someone else. It's imperative that we examine not only the property and rights to property of the taxpayer, here the deceased husband, but similarly, we must examine those property interests of others who will be affected or who own individually property that don't belong to the taxpayer. In Texas, it has been a venerable policy for over 100 years. Texas constitutional law since 1876 and statutory law for many years before that each spouse is entitled to use and possess the homestead for as long as they want to or until their death.
That's an interest over and above a half interest in the property, as Justice Stevens indicated.
Yes, it is, Justice White. It's important to understand the peculiar nature of the Texas homestead law. In fact, homesteads originated in Texas. Each spouse can own a community one-half interest in the home, or one spouse may own it all as separate property. But each spouse is given a separate property right, a homestead right, to use and possess, as that term is defined in the Texas Constitution, for their entire life.
Now, under Texas law, I suppose the survivor needn't even live on the homestead in order to preserve it, but could rent it out to others.
That is correct. Abandonment
of
the homestead.
And still maintain the homestead.
That is correct. Abandonment of the homestead does not occur even in those situations where there is a rental.
What if it's sold?
It's abandoned.
That's an abandonment if it's sold.
It's a voluntary relinquishment. Whether she leaves the home with no intention to return or sells it,
and if there's a divorce, it's terminated. Is that right?
Yes, but the terms of the property settlement agreement have a bearing on it. And each spouse, for example, in the Woods case at the Texas Supreme Court, the Texas Supreme Court there held that each spouse has an individual property right in this homestead. And in that case, the husband was claiming that even though he had had a divorce and even though his children had left the home, he was still entitled as a spouse of the marriage to continue in that homestead for as long as he lived. And the Texas Supreme Court in 1929 said, yes, clearly, this property right, this homestead right is his. In this case, we're claiming it's hers. And the fact that her husband died, or if he had gotten a divorce from her, it makes no difference. It's her property right, and it's that which the government seeks to foreclose.
How do you distinguish the joint tenancy?
Right of possession, Justice White. In all those cases that the government claims are inconsistent, Folsom, Trilling, Washington, Kosher, they all involve joint tenancy cases where the taxpayer had the right of possession. Here, the taxpayer is deceased. His heirs cannot compel the non-taxpayer spouse to leave the property, nor do they have any right to possess it with her. What they have is simply a remainder in one half that will become possessory upon her death or voluntary relinquishment. Therefore, it's unnecessary for this court to consider the alleged conflict in Folsom and the other circuits.
Is that the same with undivided interests, other undivided interests in property?
Yes, sir.
Tenants in common?
Yes, sir.
And you say that it's the peculiarities of Texas homestead law. I suppose that if they had the same provisions with respect to some other estates and land, some on joint tenants, that each party has, if they put gave the same rights to each of the. What if a joint tenant has died?
Who would be the taxpayer, Your Honor?
Well, the taxpayer, the joint tenant dies when he's a taxpayer. He owes some taxes when he dies.
Then Section 7403C would entitle the district court to have the equitable discretion to compel foreclosure or not as it chooses to do so.
Well, the taxpayer no longer has a right to possess.
His heirs would.
To possess? No.
Well, I didn't understand you to say right of survivorship, Your Honor. I understood you to say joint tenancy.
I say joint the tenancy with a right of survivorship. Tenancy.
Then in that situation, that interest expires and the survivor takes the property.
Yes, but it was subject to a lien.
That's
you
true.
You don't say that the lien is destroyed, would you?
No, but the underlying property that supports
So you
supports
say your rationale is going to support... you'll get the same result in joint tenancy with the right of survivorship as you will in this case.
That's right, Your Honor, and we would also have the same result in a tenancy by the entirety.
Well, then there is a conflict in the circuits.
Yes, there is, Your Honor. It's clear that the Fifth Circuit is taking a position different from the other circuits, but we're not relying on the Folsom decision. We don't believe that the Folsom decision was central to the Fifth Circuit's opinion.
Well, most joint tenancies are with right of survivorship. And so you're really talking about that category of cases, too, as well as homesteads.
Yes, Your Honor, it would be included
in that
category.
Tenancy by entirety?
Well, yes, Your Honor.
Is that really correct? Because during the lifetime of the joint tenants, is it not true that the taxpayer would have had the right to sell and have a partition of the proceeding in the event of a dispute with the joint owner?
As I understand property law in other states other than Texas, a tenant in common would have the right to compel partition because he has the right to possess.
That's true of joint tenancy, too.
But with the right of survivorship, I'm not sure that's the law, Your Honor. I understand it to be that the right of survivorship does not compel the one of the tenants.
Before the death of the taxpayer, they're joint tenants and own property. You're suggesting that neither one of them could compel a sale in the event of a dispute between them?
We don't have Texas law that is as active in the survivorship area as other states, so I'm speaking without a great familiarity with the total command of the survivorship rule, but I understand it to be that neither spouse can sell the property because of the survivorship feature without the consent of the other.
Or without a partition proceeding.
If it's jointly agreed to, Your Honor, yes.
It has to be jointly agreed to in a joint tenancy situation.
With right of survivorship, I understand that to be the case. It's certainly the case in Texas homestead law applicable here. Of course, Texas law is absolutely clear that neither spouse can partition, sell, or affect the other spouse's interest in the homestead without that spouse's consent. And here, this court has said Aquilano and Durham Lumber Company and Bess, authored by Justice Brennan, that this court must examine the rights defined by the states that the taxpayer has in the property, and only then will we attach consequences federally defined to those state interests. Here, we think this case is very analogous to the Durham Lumber Company decisions and the Aquilano decisions. There, the taxpayer was a general contractor who was owed money, allegedly, from the owner of the building. He owed, in turn, subcontractors who claimed the property as well. This court held in both instances, in Durham Lumber Company and Aquilano, that under state law, having examined it, that the relative states, New York and North Carolina, did not give the owner, the general contractor, the taxpayer, any property or rights to property in that chosen action owed from the owner. In fact, under state law, the subcontractors had a superior, either direct right of action against the owner for that money, or in the other case, the general contractor held it in trust. In both cases, this court held that because the general contractor taxpayer did not have any interest in those choses in action, the IRS could not enforce its tax lien against it. Only after the subcontractor's claims were fulfilled could the IRS collect its money from the, in essence, excess chosen action. That is analogous to the situation here. We have another related party, the spouse. Her interest is individual to her. Only after her interest expires through death or voluntary relinquishment may the government enforce its lien.
Why couldn't, under your theory, the government at least try to market the non-possessory interest of the taxpayer, sell it, and use the proceeds of that sale to satisfy its lien?
They could, Your Honor. They have not sought to do so.
Well, in that case, they'd just be selling the lien.
They would be selling the future possessory interest in one half of the community, Your Honor.
You don't suggest at all that nothing in your position would indicate that the lien is invalid.
Oh, not at all, Your Honor.
Or that it would ever become invalid.
The lien attaches to his interest in the underlying homestead, which
and
is
it's going to be collectible no later than the end of her life.
She's 70 years old, and it'll be, for life expectancy soon.
Or when she sells it, you say that.
Or abandons it, Your Honor. She could swap homestead, to answer your question, Justice O'Connor, and would lose the protection we're seeking here.
If she swapped?
Yes, Your Honor. It's clear under Texas law that
She would have a homestead in a substitute property?
That's exactly right.
It wouldn't be protected against this lien.
That's right, because her second homestead would not have arisen prior to the attachment and assessment of the tax. In this case, she acquired the homestead in 1955, certainly long before the tax lien arose.
Are you saying that there's nothing here that will defeat the federal government's right to collect the tax? It merely is deferring the date, deferring the time.
That is precisely what we're saying, Your Honor, Mr. Chief Justice.
What's the interest these days on federal delinquent taxes?
I think they just lowered it to 16%, Your Honor. It was 21% last year.
Mr. Elliott, what about Mr. Rogers, the second husband here? Does he have a homestead interest in the property?
He does, but it is subject to this federal tax lien.
Subject to the lien.
Yes. In this case, there have been various courts of appeals that have considered these cases involving one taxpayer liable but a homestead affecting two states, affecting both spouses. There's a consistent pattern, we think, in all of these decisions. These are not the Folsom line of cases. These are those other cases, such as Herndon, Hershberger, Heffron, Weitzner. In all those cases, the courts of appeals have exhibited a consistent theme. Does the state give the non-taxpayer spouse a property right, as we have in Texas, as Hershberger saw in Kansas, or does it simply an exemption from creditors, as the Fifth Circuit witnessed in Weitzner? We suggest that that is the proper rule. As this Court said repeatedly, as we pointed out earlier, Bess, Durham Lumber Company, others, it is a proper balance, a logical and sound position to rely on the state law and what is that state law insofar as the taxpayer is concerned, and then attach consequences federally defined. All of those decisions, even the Herndon decision, allowed the wife to live in the property for the remainder of her life if the wife was given a property right.
Well, let's go back to the joint tenancy with the right of survivorship. You say the law of Texas is that the one joint tenant can't force the sale of the property in the petition.
Yes, Your Honor, that is my understanding.
Well, suppose both joint tenants are alive. The government has a tax lien on the property by virtue of the unpaid taxes of one of the joint tenants, and it wants to foreclose. May it?
No.
So you're talking about not only where a joint tenant is deceased, but at any time there's a joint tenancy with the right of survivorship, the government may not foreclose on the property.
That is correct, because the underlying property interest, Justice White, expires. It does no longer exist after the death of the first spouse to die.
Well, certainly there are plenty of cases, aren't there, or maybe not so many, that do permit the government to foreclose during the lifetime of one of the joint tenants.
Section 7403C gives the district court the power to compel foreclosure in those cases where the taxpayer and the non-taxpayer share an interest in the property. We contend here that Section 7403 does not apply because there's no joint interest here. The wife of the interest of the
home. Well, talk about the joint tenancy. I don't understand that. May the government foreclose to collect its taxes on where there's a joint tenancy and the right of survivorship?
It would be our view that if under state law the first spouse to die's interest in the property expired and extinguished and became defeasible on his death, then no, because his property...
All right, but how about during his lifetime? That's what I want to know.
Yes, they would be empowered to foreclose,
even
Your Honor.
Even though the joint tenant who owes the taxes could not force a sale of the property.
Yes, but the interest of the government would also expire on the death of the taxpayer. The underlying property interest to which the lien attached is all that the government gets, and it gets no more than that. And for the government to be able to take a possessory interest in this survivorship property and have it continue beyond the life of the joint tenant means that the government's property interest is stronger than that of the underlying fee owner, and we claim that that's not what the government's entitled to do.
What if a fee owner conveys property to the Ford Foundation or to his local church, reserving a life estate in himself, and then incurs a tax liability? What's the consequence in terms of a tax lien? Can it be asserted only against his life estate that he's reserved? Or is it a burden on the whole fee?
The scope of Section 7403C, Your Honor, does not make clear to me that the government would take any more than what the life estate owner had. And what the life estate owner had was merely possession and the normal rights and duties attributable to the life estate tenant during his lifetime. And since the Ford Foundation, in your case, was the transferee of the property before the time the tax lien arose, I would say that all that the government gets in that case is what the life estate owner had and expires at his death.
Now let me change the hypothetical. He conveyed it to one of his children, reserving a life estate, which is fairly common among very common transaction among people with small estates.
I don't believe, Your Honor, that the identity of the transferee makes any difference, except in those instances where under state law the transferor father might have some possibility of reversion after the children expired, which, of course, is theoretically possible. In the Ford Foundation hypothetical, I assume that under state law he has nothing more than what the normal rights and duties of a life estate tenant, and they expire at his death.
May I go back to Justice White's question because I didn't understand your answer? Assume a joint tenancy, an ordinary joint tenancy, no homestead overlay. And one of the joint tenants is tax delinquent. May the government under Texas law, is there any provision of Texas law that prevents the government from moving in and selling the delinquent taxpayer's interest in the joint tenancy?
No, Your Honor, but right of survivorship in Texas is not common. It's not something that we experience regularly.
If the government did move in, isn't the joint tenancy thereupon destroyed?
Yes, in the absence of a right of survivorship, I think it's important to distinguish the two. Justice White, I understood, was asking me about right of survivorship. In the absence of the right of survivorship, clearly the government can cash out the other joint interest owners. But in the instance of a survivorship, we submit no, because...
Well, again, I'm confused by your terms. Do you have such a thing as joint tenancy in Texas without right of survivorship?
I call it a tenancy in common.
Of course, that's a tenancy in common. If you have a joint tenancy, you have right of survivorship.
Then in that instance, I would say that the government does not get any more than the taxpayer had, and his interest expires on his death, and absent a possibility of reversion.
Well, we're not talking about his death. We're talking about moving in before he died.
Then the government can take his interest. They can cash out the non-taxpayer, and all that they get is the value attributable to his term.
Well, you're now suggesting that if the one joint tenant who owes the taxes dies, the government lien ends. A while ago, you said the government never loses its lien, and that it would just attach to the property. It was only a question of time. Now you're suggesting that in joint tenancy cases, the government's interest expires.
I'm suggesting, to clarify, Justice White, that his underlying property interest expires. The lien does not expire, but the lien attaches only to those property interests that the taxpayer had.
Well, when he's dead, he doesn't have any property interest, you say.
In that particular property, that is correct. It extinguishes.
Well, then the lien expires.
Insofar as that property is concerned,
well,
yes, Your
Honor. Well, that's the only property that it attached to. I thought you... So now you're saying that your rule means the government loses its lien upon the death of a joint tenant.
Yes, Your Honor, and under your hypothetical, that is correct.
Well,
unless it has foreclosed during his lifetime.
That is correct.
You've got a hard row to hoe there.
Mr. Elliott?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the members of the court, I had announced I had a voice problem. I didn't know that it was as serious. Can I be heard? Can you hear me?
Barely.
I will try very hard to. I represent, of course, Mrs. Ingram, the companion case to the Rogers case. And Mr. Elliott has stated for me and on our behalf our position with regard to the homestead rights as they're interpreted under Texas law and as they have been interpreted by this court and by the Supreme Court of Texas in the making determinations that homestead right is a separate estate and property under the Texas Constitution, which differs considerably from a joint tenancy or a tenancy in common, which are not states of property rights that are popular or known in Texas, unless it be as a part of a partnership, part of a written agreement. We do not have those characteristics of real property in Texas. A homestead right.
Mr. Elliott, your predecessor, Mr. William Elliott, indicated that under Texas law, the homestead terminates on the divorce.
fact that there
why then, in the case of the Ingram situation, would the government be precluded from reaching the taxpayer's interest?
Your Honor, specifically by constitutional amendment, a single person in Texas was given the same homestead right as a married person. And to say that Mrs. Ingram's homestead rights ceased on her divorce is an inaccurate statement with regard to the law in Texas. That is not the law in Texas.
So you disagree with Mr. William Elliott on that point?
If that's what he said, I would disagree, Your Honor, yes. The homestead right of the divorced spouse in this particular case happened to be the subject matter of a property settlement agreement, which granted that property to the wife in that case, in this particular case. The taxpayer, Don Ingram, there has never been any contention that his interest is not in the property, is not subject to the government's lien. Likewise, there was a matter of some $280 worth of joint tax liability, which we have no problem with, and their money is on deposit in a bank in Dallas to pay the joint tax liability to the extent of $288. I wanted to point out in relation to questions asked by Judge Blackmun, that we do not feel that the marketability of the property is a problem for the taxpayer. The marketability of the interest should be the government's exclusive problem. In this case, at the district court level and at the Fifth Circuit level, the government has taken the position that not that they want one half of the proceeds of the sale. They want to be able to sell these properties and take whatever they are in the lien amounts to, and it might be more than 100% even of the proceeds of the sale of property. The question is not before the court as to whether or not the property is to be sold and the proceeds divided equally. We tried to make that kind of a deal and couldn't. Thank you.
You may continue, Mr. Elliott.
Thank you, Your Honor, Chief Justice. I would like to say to the court that Mr. Bill Elliott and I have conferred with regard to Justice O'Connor's question regarding the effect of a divorce on community property, and Mr. Bill Elliott agrees with me that a divorce could affect the homestead right of a party if, in effect, as in this case, Donald Ingram gave up his homestead right by conveying it to his spouse. But a divorce as such does not per se affect the homestead rights of either parties. It's something that must be agreed to or disposed of at the time of the divorce. Obviously, if one party moves to another place, it would probably be said that that party has abandoned the homestead in light of the rule that one person may have only one homestead, not two. The party remaining in the home would have the homestead rights would continue with the residency in the possession of that property, unless by some affirmative act the party disavows the homestead right. In this particular case, the author of the opinion in the Fifth Circuit, Judge Jerry Williams, was a University of Texas professor before he was appointed to the bench and taught real property, among other courses there. And when he in his opinion, he describes the homestead right as being one that was actually remanded to the district court for determination of whether there was abandonment or not. That was the decision in the Fifth Circuit. It may be a question that why did the district court, who the same judge, Honorable William Mack Taylor, heard both of these cases within a 2 weeks period of time and had a different result. He granted the government's motion for summary judgment in the one case, and the taxpayers or the non-taxpayer spouse motion in the other case. It had already been predetermined that the case, both cases, would be appealed. His attitude was, I've got to be right in one of the cases. So that's why it was done that way. He announced that at the time that he did.
500 ballpark.
Yes. And Judge Taylor didn't want to try any more jury cases because he's going to be leaving the bench and didn't want to get strung out in a long jury trial. In this case, the government's position has been, he announced that. That's not my opinion. That's what he announced at the time. The government's position here, the tax collector's position is, we're going to sell this property, and we're going to take your interest, Mrs. Ingram, and although you owe no taxes, we're going to take your interest, and we're going to pay your husband's tax bill. That's really what this case bottoms out on, and we don't believe that to be the law in this country, and we do not believe that that is consistent with the Constitution of Texas. We think the effect of a decision supporting the government's position, as it is very narrowly stated, would have the effect of abrogating the Texas Constitution in its clear language, and the Texas Supreme Court decisions in the Simonette case. Incidentally, Judge Taylor's father sat on the Texas Supreme Court. That is the case that held the Texas homestead right to be a separate vested right in property and not subject to being divested except in those matters prescribed. And with that, I conclude. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in...